kind of threatening to come up after all of these experts. That's, I'm not an expert. You know what an expert is, right? X is an unknown quantity. Spurt is a drip under pressure. So here I am. So it's been a very interesting discussion so far, and I'm going to make a few just general observations about some of the things that we've been observing. Let me first say a word about money. We keep hearing money and money being created out of nothing. Well, it always has been. I mean, it's whatever people are willing to accept as a claim on stuff. That's all we really care about, right? And so money has value if you know you can take it and give it to somebody and get stuff. Whatever you want, a hamburger or a car or whatever, get stuff in exchange for that, right? I mean, that's what money is, so it's been many things, the tulip bulbs, you know, there's a lot of stuff, there's been coins, who knows. So, I mean, that's money. So it's anything, we economists define as anything widely accepted as a means of payment. I used to ask my students about that. I said, well, you know, is the euro money? And they would think about it. I remember my students who were in North Philadelphia, so they're not sure Europe exists. Said, yeah, we think that's money. And I said, well, how many of you have been overseas? And some hands would go up. I said, well, how many of you have been able to spend a euro in the United States? Or a yen? Or, you know, and of course they'd all agree, you can't do it. I said, but there's probably not a country in the world that where you can't find somebody that'll take a dollar, right? That's money. Widely accepted. It has to have, you know you can exchange this piece of paper. You know, you don't have to trust in God, it says on there, but you know, you just have to trust that this piece of paper can be converted into stuff. All right, that's the value. Now, money just makes it easy to do this, right? Barter, we know, was a bad idea, so we kind of gave that up a while ago. But so I'm a banker. I'm a little banker, chairman of the board of a bank that has three branches, Liberty Bell Bank, New Jersey. And we're an industrial bank. We make loans to people who are doing stuff with equipment and all that kind of good thing. But we also finance, you know, that horrible consumption stuff. And we make it pretty easy, especially if you're a homeowner. You know, I had a cash flow problem this month, or actually last month in January. So I called the bank up and I said, I need $10,000, you know, because I have the quarterly insurance payment or the tax payment coming up and people aren't paying me my expenses, so there's the cash flow problem. Give me $10,000. Boom. So $10,000 shows up in my checking account, and of course, my IOU, my home equity line of credit, goes up by $10,000. And I guess there's no limit to how much we might be able to do that, except the regulators come in and complain at our banks, you know, if our loan to core deposits, not just all deposits, but core deposits, loan to deposit ratio gets too high, the regulators start, you know, nagging you, and they don't like that, so they give you negative points for that. And of course, you know, you get enough negative points from the regulators, then the FDIC insurance premiums go up because your rating isn't so good. So, you know, there are a lot of ways that, you know, that we try to manage all that kind of stuff. And so, you see that system works pretty well, pretty efficiently. It may not be available to everybody. We were talking about that earlier. You have to have a home to have a home equity line of credit and lots of other things. But yeah, but that's the business we're in, and it works pretty well so far. But we do see a lot of problems with it. As the chief economist for NFIB, I pay attention to 300,000 or so firms that I take a sample of every month and collect data from them, and a lot of them are financial institutions of various kinds, and so then we worry about those little guys and gals who perform those functions. So I'll just make some comments about central banking as I go along here. I'm a firm believer in a picture is worth a thousand words, so I've got pictures. Here's one. That's our job, right, as economists, to tell you where you are and which way we're going. And of course, I put up there, I said, two ways out, neither one's desirable. And that's basically because if you look at, for example, an issue that you're very familiar with, the Germans versus the Greeks, you know, who's going to win here, right? And who's the, is there austerity in Greece, or is there, or did German savers get screwed? That's a technical term in economics. We're trying to figure that out, and the politicians are in the middle of this. And we still have, you know, 5 million people in the United States who are underwater in their homes. Are they going to become renters, or are they going to be owners? Which means some little old lady in Florida who put the mortgage money up, you know, gets screwed. That's the kind of thing we're worrying about. So that's a real issue for us to try to figure out what to do with this. This is your warning, says we should have known better than to ask economists for directions. I have a couple of illustrations of that along the way. Let's see here, here we go. So let me just, you know, make a few observations that we've already heard a lot about today. You know, why do we like a central bank, you know? Barter doesn't work very well. Private bank issuance of their own currency, those things don't work. Confidence is critical. Supply of money has to be kind of managed some way or another, so you can't just have it, you know, anybody creating money, et cetera. That could be a problem. And of course, we know the demand for currency or money does vary, so we'd like bank, you know, somebody to kind of manage that whole process. Central bank is the kind of logical person to do this for, a big political entity, however big that is. So we used to have state banks doing this, and we don't do that anymore. Now, what kinds of things do we want from a central bank? Why do we like, well, low transactions costs. I mean, the whole idea of the payment system is to, so you don't waste resources, your time and other resources, making transactions. That's just a waste of time. You'd like transactions to be kind of costless if you could, so that's our goal, make transactions as easy as we can. So, you know, so there's my definition of money, wide acceptance. You want your money, whatever it is, to be widely accepted. So anybody you hand your currency to, whatever it is, they are happy to take it because they know they can turn it into a certain amount of stuff. And that's the kind of confidence that you can have in the dollar. And that's why inflation, of course, is not a good thing. Because it changes the whole system. Basic access for everybody to the payment system. You know, that's important. And, you know, we have some weird things going on in the U.S. We have this one thing, policy called, kind of on the side, I guess, Operation Choke Point. The regulators have decided that there are firms in the United States that they don't want to have banking services. And so we, my little bank even, three branches, were really small, right? We've been forced by the regulators. You know, they don't make you do it. They just tell you, we don't like that firm here. And it could be a gun shop, or it could be a coin dealer, or gas stations with a lot of cash going through. We don't like that because we think that's a chance for, you know, money laundering to happen. So we want you to, we'd be happier if you didn't have that client. And so we've had to get rid of clients. Now, you don't have to get rid of that client, but when they come back for their review, which is too often, in my opinion, and you still have that client, you know, that you're going to get some demerits again, and the demerits are not good. You don't like demerits because, again, it raises your insurance. So, you know, you don't want a system that does that. And so those are the kinds of things we want the central bank to kind of oversee. And the question is how they're going to do it. So there's some of the issues we have. Well, the banking system is dominated by big banks, really dominated by big banks. And the big banks, you know, I often say, don't do banking. You know, they do other stuff, you know, like trading and things like that, but they don't do kind of fundamental old-fashioned banking, which is lending to local firms and local consumers and providing assistance and those kinds of areas. So they don't do that. And then you can think about, and this has already been discussed, so I'll just say it kind of again, you know, the depositors are forced to buy shares in a mutual fund, you know, managed by each bank. Now that's an interesting kind of facet of the way we do it. So I have a great operation out at the bank. I pay depositors who put money in the bank 25 basis points, and my net interest margin is like 350 or something like that, so it's nice little spread. The depositors don't share in that success. You know, only the shareholders do. Maybe that's not right, because after all, the depositors aren't taking a lot of risk, at least up to whatever the guaranteed limit is by the FDIC. So they're not taking the risk, so maybe they don't deserve, you know, more money. But I mean, that's kind of the nature of the business that we're running there. So I'm making loans, and their deposits are coming in, and they kind of, you know, are investing in that whole thing. Basic access for all I talked about, so a trustworthy system, of course, fairness and apolitical. And the latest issue we have in the United States is kind of a fun one, and a very good friend of mine has become a marijuana farmer in California, and he's bringing in a lot of cash, but no bank will touch him because, of course, federally, you can't sell pot, you can't sell marijuana. And so no bank, you know, or financial institution wants to take this account on. And so they're trying to figure out, you know, the people who are in this marijuana business, medical, whatever, are trying to figure out where to put their money. You know, where do they have to build buildings and, you know, hire people to protect it. And so it's, again, access to the system. You know, my last point down there is mixing banking, trading, and investing, you know, is maybe not the best idea. There are a lot of big banks that were part of our big problem in the past that weren't banks. They're now bank members of the banking system, banking community, because they needed to have access to the liquidity that the Fed could provide. So we have them there. And then we have this whole thing about Fed communication, which gets confusing to me a little bit, and I'll give you some examples of that. Janet's no longer with us, but she left her mark. So this is, you can predict now what's going to happen to interest rates in the U.S. Because our new chairman, right, is taller than Janet, so that means rates are going up. Very simple. So I wrote this one out a while ago, but there's a million examples. So Loretta Mester, who's president of the Cleveland Fed, says to the press, you know, case for a November hike is very strong. And then Dudley, who's the president of the New York Fed, says, you got to have a lot of caution in raising interest rates. They both said this on the same day. And so I think this whole communication thing has been a real problem. One of the things that really embarrasses me is that they now ask the Fed governors to forecast. Now, some of them aren't even economists, right? But even the economists, you know, I mean, if you look at the Bloomberg surveys we have or the Wall Street Journal, you have 40 different forecasts for GDP out of 40 economists, right? So what they did with this is to show that the Fed, we thought the Fed was kind of better, right, than the rest of us. Now, what they've shown us is they're not. They're not any better. So that, we kind of lose confidence in what they can do. But this is what we did. We created all that liquidity. The Fed is hoarding $4 trillion of risk-free assets. Not good. We experimented with crazy policies. So here's the liquidity trap problem and net negative interest rate policy, NIRP. Really, I mean, this was not a good idea. If you think about what it's asking people to do, it's nonsense. Then we got the whole inflation part. We have central banks that are trying to create inflation. What? They're not supposed to do that. And they pretend that, you know, if you read the minutes, the Fed says the Fed says that the inflation rate is going to go up to 2% and then stop. Yeah, exactly how does that happen? I'm worried about that. So here's the latest Fed, I call it backcast, I changed it to backcast to a forecast. So this is January 18th, looking at the fourth quarter GDP. You can see that one of the Atlanta Fed had 3.4, the New York Fed had 3.9, and the government says it was 2.6. Now there are a lot of little technicalities to go along with that. But anyway, so here's what's happening to our banks, and I just wrote at the bottom, I said, is this because of technology? Good reason to have fewer banks. Or is it because of the cost of regulation? My little bank is merging with a bigger bank because the compliance costs have become so immense and so complicated that, you know, we just can't support all that legal stuff. So we're getting out of the little banking business and getting into bigger banking business. So I'm not sure it's a good idea. I take a survey of all these little firms. Take a look here. This is the net percent of owners who say, last time I got a loan, the rate was higher. Well, you can see it swings from almost plus 50 to minus 30%, meaning far more say my rates are lower. look at that volatility. That's interest rates doing their job in the market, allocating capital. Then, starting in 2009, look, nothing. Because the Fed took interest rates out of the business of allocating capital. And that's a terrible thing to do. This is the other thing that we have to talk about. The Fed, of course, is creating asset values. And I just looked at the ratio of consumer net worth, according to the Fed, to GDP. So that's claims on stuff, net worth. You can sell your Apple shares and buy a VW or a Mercedes, depending on how many shares you have, right? And so the net worth is kind of a claim on output, and GDP's output. So for decades, we carried $3.50 of net worth for every dollar of GDP. Now look, we had the dot-com bubble, the housing bubble, and look where we are now. I see big trouble coming from that. I like this. So it says, sometimes I think we expect too much from the Federal Reserve. Yes, we do, but they seem to go along. I worry about debt. So I put that up there because that's going to create some problems for us. Here's what I see coming along. And this is a reminder, of course, that when we let the politicians take care of these kinds of things, we can have some difficulty. So, just my quick overview, a few comments about where we are. We definitely need a better functioning banking system. We've got a lot of good ideas about how to make it work better, and you're looking at one of them here in this country, and I think this is a great conference and a great time to discuss better ways to provide the payment system that you and I deserve. Thanks.